Hey Swifties, welcome to a brand new episode of Swiftie School, where together we walk Clown Ilya Street covering the latest news and Easter eggs from our fearless leader, Taylor Swift. I'm your host, Reagan Bailey, and it is enchanting to have you here. Now that we're out of the woods, let's get into today's episode. It's another great day to be alive at the same time as Taylor Swift. Hello, everyone. How are we doing in our post-1989 TV era? I just want to jump right in today. I'm going to be giving you my unfiltered, honest, raw thoughts on the Vault track specifically, and then the album as a whole. And I want to give you some tidbits that you might not have seen online or heard about regarding the album thus far, specifically some of the people who she collaborated on behind the scenes. We're also going to be talking about what to look for in the coming weeks in terms of all things Taylor, Swiftivities, and of course, Swiftie submissions. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Now, you guys, I will be honest, 1989 is definitely not one of my top ranked albums. Was I excited for this one? Absolutely. The reason being is I felt like once I heard that Taylor thought this was going to be the best re-release that she's had thus far, or her favorite, or the one she's most proud of, I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of curious. The hype is real and everyone is like talking about this nonstop. And I have to be honest, I will start with my negative and then the rest will be positive. My only negative is while the audio in this album feels and sounds crisper than the crispiest soda that you ever drink in your whole life, I feel like there are parts to me that sound mildly, I don't know the fancy word for it, like auto-tuned or robotic. And that's my only critique listening through and the comparing the OG versus TV is I feel like there are certain little teeny tiny parts where I'm like, that sounds a little funky to me. Not sure what that is. If you are a musically inclined person, maybe you would be able to inform me. But that is my only criticism of the entire album. Now, we were clowning very hard for a double album or perhaps more features. And I think this was an interesting choice on Taylor's part. I think now knowing that we're probably not getting a double album, it leads me to think that we are going to be moving pretty quickly through these next few re-records so that Taylor can move on to her next discography. Like, what is she going to be adding to her discography? I think she is not going to want to pigeonhole herself into these 10 eras because she's at her peak of her career right now. You know, she's absolutely everywhere. She is the biggest pop star, not even pop star, probably celebrity in the world. They're saying she's the next best thing since like the Beatles and Michael Jackson. So I feel like it would be a big mistake on her part not to jump quickly into her next album or release that in between now and the last two re-records. So I'm curious to see if perhaps, I guess we would never know, but I'm curious if maybe she didn't do features on this album or move forward with any sort of double or triple album because she wants to kind of keep things going swiftly, if you will. And I'm wondering too if she's regretting, you know, the pace that she moved at with the Eras tour itself, because she's still only like 43% of the way through the tour. So she has a long way to go. I mean, I just imagine putting myself in her shoes. She must be tired of playing these songs, right? Like she must. I don't know. But then again, she's said that this has been the greatest experience of her life. So who knows what's actually going through her head. But I'm sure she's ready to give us something new, especially being the pace that she's been moving at, you know, from Folklore to Evermore to Midnights and all these re-releases. But what have we gotten, like 5 or 6 albums from her in like 2 years? So I'm curious to see what's in store next. But that being said, I've got my notes here. I want to dive into my Vault track ranking. Now, I'm sure you guys can relate, but every single day my Vault track ranking changes. And honestly, my favorite Taylor song changes. The only thing that really stays consistent for me is my album ranking. I am very hardcore in the fact that Folklore is my number one forever and evermore. That's a hard one for me, but I am very firm on that being my ranking. Now, let's talk about the Vault tracks. I could totally remove Suburban Legends and Slut and be perfectly fine never hearing them ever again. That's a little harsh, but I think the reason I feel that way is because I am so, so heavily in love with the other three. My number one is Now That We Don't Talk. If you saw the reel I posted, like I have been moving and grooving to this song. I feel like there's something so addicting about the beat of it. And it's less about the lyrics for me. It's more about the beat, which I'm addicted to. So number one is Now That We Don't Talk. Number two, Is It Over Now? I'm obsessed. And also my reaction video to this just makes me LOL if you saw it, the bird situation. If not, I won't spoil it for you. Go check it out on my page. And then number three would be Say Don't Go. Now, speaking of Say Don't Go, I feel like I'm saying it different now that I've heard it. Say Don't Go. It's a strange word, a strange phrase. But let's talk about Say Don't Go because there's a little story time I have for you regarding this song and the person who actually wrote this song with Taylor. Now, if you are probably born after the year 2000, you'll have no idea who this is, and that's fine because I'll give you the scoop and everything you need to know. But Taylor actually wrote Say Don't Go with the very, 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 very famous, probably the most famous female songwriter of all time, and that is Diane Warren. Now, to give you some context, Diane Warren is heavily, heavily awarded. She is a Grammy-nominated artist, Grammy winner, Emmy winner, Golden Globe, Billboard Music Awards. I mean, the list goes on and on. She's an American songwriter. She lives here in California. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But she really came to fame in the 1980s. Now, let's talk about the significance of this. So back in the 1980s, she became the first songwriter in history on the Billboard magazine to have 7 hits from all different artists charting at the same time. So the magnitude of that is insane. 7 different artists she had collaborated with to do songwriting, and all 7 of them were charting at the same time, and she's the only person ever do that. Since the 1980s, she has gone on to do a very full career. So many of you guys were messaging me saying that Say Don't Go sounds like an 80s hit song. Some of you even said that Say Don't Go sounds like a song Madonna would have written, and I know exactly why. What does this have to do with the reason the song sounds the way it does? She has worked with pretty much everybody: Celine Dion, Beyonce, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, Elton John, Cher, Olivia John-Newton, Enrique Iglesias, like Aerosmith, hello? Like, she has worked with so many, Hilary Duff, Mandy Moore, like the list goes on and on. This woman is so crazy cool and so talented, and she actually came out with her first debut album in 2021. But I think that this was probably a huge moment for Taylor's career back when she wrote this song nearly a decade ago with Diane Warren, because at the time, this album wasn't released yet. 1989 was what Taylor broke into the industry as a pop album extraordinaire. So the fact that she was able to score a moment working with Diane Warren was probably so crazy rewarding for her. And I saw on Diane Warren's Instagram that she posted Taylor had sent her flowers, which is just a typical ode to how awesome Taylor is. And on the flip side, speaking to Diane Warren's character, I think it's super cool that Diane Warren has been interviewed about her thoughts in terms of how does she feel that Taylor released a song that they wrote together nearly a decade ago, and she said it was effing awesome and she totally was here for it. So I think that's really cool. We love that Taylor is constantly collaborating with other female songwriters, artists. She's been doing this since the beginning of her career, which is awesome. Now, I thought it was a little unhinged that Taylor ended up releasing the 1989 deluxe version so quickly after the album dropped. I feel like it was almost intentional for that to be the case because it wasn't anything overly exciting, being that we only got the 1 vault track. I actually really love the Bad Blood Kendrick Lamar deluxe version. I think this is actually one of my favorite re-records on the album. I think it's just fun and cool to like hear their voices all these years later. And I just think it's really awesome that Kendrick Lamar was willing to be a part of this yet again. I'm sure he loved, and you can hear it if you listen to the song where he says, "You forgive, you forget, but you never let it go." He's like so passionate when he's saying it. And it's probably because it's really cool for him to see that Swifties have really taken his lyrics and ran with it for all of these years. So I love that they were able to get in the studio and record that together. Now, speaking of deluxe and exclusive versions of the album, a lot of Swifties have been picking up the tangerine version of the album or the vinyl at Target. I think there's a CD and a vinyl. I might be mistaken. I'm about to head to Target, so I'll report back on that. I believe there should be a CD and a vinyl. But on that specific version, we have the additional song Sweeter Than Fiction, which I have heard bits of it and I have yet to listen to the entire thing. But I want to talk about how this song relates to Taylor's latest Instagram post where she calls out her relationship with Jack Antonoff. This Instagram post was so, so fishy and reputation coded. I feel like it was really random for her to do an entire post dedicated to Jack Antonoff and their relationship and how she looks at him as a little brother and yada yada. Being that they write music together so frequently, I feel like it was a little odd for her to kind of loop together Jack Antonoff, the tangerine version of the album. And by the way, it's available at Target. So I was looking a little bit deeper into it. And first of all, I want to highlight the fact that 6 is throughout this entire post. Not only did she include 6 images, I think there was like 4 pictures of her and Jack, which date back to the 1989 era, and then 1 picture of the album, and then 1 of like the promo for Target. When looking into this deeper, I noticed that she also called out 6 years. So we've got 6 pictures, 6 years. And then the number 10 is seen when she writes 10 feet tall. Now, we have been clowning like crazy for November 10th to be the re-release of Reputation or something crazy and unhinged happening that day. So I thought it was interesting that we saw both 6 and 10 in this post. I wanted to also give you guys a definition of the word that she uses. I believe precocious. I have no clue. But this word, the definition is develop abilities at an early age. Not quite sure the significance of that, but it was a weird word to use and it was 10 letters long. So that's another 10 for you. Aside from this slight nod to Reputation, a ton of you have been doing major, major deep dives on the lyric videos associated with the 1989 TV album. These can be found on YouTube. You can totally go watch them. They are just like a loop of graphics that happen behind the lyrics. It's a lyric video. You guys know what that is. But there is one in particular that you guys keep calling out where it looks like in the sand when the water's washing up, there is an R, an E, and a P. I totally see it, but I also think it is weird that it's backwards. Like the R is on the far right. It looks like P-E-R versus R-E-P. I think that's a little strange, but again, it's pointing to Rep. So we know Rep is coming. Like this is no secret that Reputation is the next album. It would be wild for debut to come first, but being that there is no explanation, just Reputation, I feel like it makes most sense for Reputation to be the one that's coming next. And speaking of the likelihood of this, if we were to get Reputation on November 10th, this would take place in Argentina. Looking ahead to the shows that Taylor has coming up, looks like we've got shows happening on November 9th, 10th, and 11th. Those are happening in Argentina. And then the following week, we have 3 shows happening in Brazil, the 17th, 18th, and 19th. And then 3 more shows in Brazil, the 24th, 25th, 26th. Now, I heard a rumor that Travis is apparently going to be attempting to attend as many of these international shows as possible. And I think that would definitely cause quite the frenzy, not only at the concert, but also just in the media, being that they are eating up literally anything and everything that this man does. So I'm curious to see. I mean, that would be some true dedication. And a lot of people who are speculating that this relationship is purely a PR stunt, I think this would go to show that it is far beyond that, because why would he waste his time in the middle of the NFL football season to be flying all around the world to go see Taylor for funsies? You know, like that just seems bananas to me. I'm totally bought in that this is a for real forever kind of relationship, but let me know your guys' thoughts if you feel like I'm a little Lululemon about that. Now, switching gears, we have to discuss Ellie Conway. Who the heck is this and what does she have to do with Taylor Swift? So many people are speculating that this author named Ellie Conway, who's coming out with her first book ever, is actually Taylor Swift. Here are some of the reasons. I'm going to give you the reasons why people think this is and then the reasons why I don't think it is. Number one, it references that Ellie Conway is a redheaded author. Okay, so if we reference the All Too Well 10-minute version music video short film situation, Taylor does play the role of a redheaded author towards the end of the short film. Coincidence? Yes. Truth? Who knows? Secondly, there are a lot of clues on the actual book cover that Ellie Conway has coming out. There seemingly is a red lipstick that is from Pat McGrath Labs on the front cover. There is also a smoking gun, which we know is a lyric that Taylor uses quite often. Now, the Pat McGrath lipstick is particularly interesting because it is rumored that Taylor wears exclusively Pat McGrath Labs lipstick and makeup on the Eras Tour. So this is a very interesting connection. I will give it that. And then there's just been a lot of weird clowning things happening regarding Taylor Swift. Like there's a cat that follows the account that either Taylor follows or is related to Taylor in some way. There's also like a picture of Olivia Benson, like the logo used at the end of the Eras Tour film, in some sort of like graphic on the account. So there's a lot of weird clowning things happening. In my honest opinion, I think that whoever this Ellie Conway person is got roped into this weird crazy situation, and she happens to be a redhead who likes Taylor Swift, who's coming out with her first book and happens to be really private. So I'm sure she's not shying away from the fact that this is great publicity, but it just seems odd to me that if this was Taylor, number one, it's really weird timing. Like this woman has a lot going on. But secondly, why wouldn't Taylor want to have her name all over this entire book, let alone the production that's being associated with it? Because this book is already being turned into a feature film and it's not being directed by Taylor. And we know that Taylor's been heavily focusing on her directorial career. So I just find it a little strange that people think this is her, because I don't know. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Now, if you guys want more info on this Ellie Conway situation, let me know. I can do a Swiftie School reel on Instagram for you guys. But the last thing I want to do is chat about this Swiftie submission that was sent in from Bristol. Now, Bristol has a really interesting point here. She was talking about the date that we got 1989 TV. So that happened on 10/27 of this year, right? And in the Taylor's lyrics, 1989 TV Vault Tracks, she says 300 takeout coffees later. If you do the math, we have 10/27 as the album release date. What happens 300 days before 10/27? 12/31. New Year's Eve. Now, we have been clowning very hard that something might happen on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day because, duh, Reputation has a song called New Year's Day. So hear me out. What if, like we've been thinking, on 11/10, we get the announcement for Reputation? Perhaps she's going to announce it. It's not going to be a secret crazy drop like we all think. Announcement on 11/10 in Argentina. And then New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, we get the actual album release. Am I crazy? I feel like that sounds like a reasonable theory, right? Nonetheless, this was an incredible find, Bristol. Thank you so much for sending that in. And in case you're new to the podcast or you're just joining, make sure you go to the link in my bio or head to the description wherever you're streaming the podcast. I have a form where you guys can send in your theory. You can also email me if that's easier for you. You can also request a guest on the episode, whatever it might be. And I have to tell you guys, I have a few ideas for some guests on the podcast. Logistically, it's a little scary for me because I am not the best when it comes to tech and all of that jazz. But there is one particular person that I think you guys will be so crazy excited about, and it's very unexpected, but they have a 1 degree like relationship away from the Eras Tour itself and all the people behind it. They were actually one of the people behind it, I'll give you that. So I am going to be reaching out to them. Hopefully they would be interested. I had told them about my podcast when I originally met them and they seemed down. So I'm going to be doing some outreach. So if you guys have anybody that you would like to request, it could be a fan page, it could be someone who you just like following that likes Taylor Swift, but they have to have something interesting, obviously, to chat with me about, or we could just sit around and clown. That's totally fine with me too. Let me know. Submit it to the form, send me an email, whatever it might be. But for now, that is where I'm leaving you guys with my rankings of 1989 TV. I want to know if you guys are still clowning for a double album. I feel like I am moving on, moving on and moving away from my double album theory because I have now switched gears into thinking things are about to pick up and pick up very fast. What do we think? Hope you guys have a great day. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will see you on the next one. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I know all too well how busy life can be, and I am so grateful that you chose to stay. Now, just know this is me trying, and I would greatly appreciate it if you took a minute to leave a review or maybe share this episode with a fellow Swiftie. Make sure you join my broadcast channel on Instagram for more Swiftivities. And long story short, this love is real, and I'm beyond grateful for your support. See you next time.